Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grit. As the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the clubhead is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
I wouldn't go so far as to say chilly, but it ain't exactly golf weather out there. Good morning. Hardy here with you on the Sports Hub Golf Club, 7:03, Saturday morning. To Captain Sean McElroy producing for us this morning. Sean Silver, just heard him there on headlines. Joining us today on the show, Bill McInerney from Core Golf. I am falling in love with Core Golf. I was there last week. I'll tell you more about that later. I am a big fan of Core Golf in Natick. It's not just a driving range. It is a full-on practice facility, and I got some short game work in earlier this week. Completely unexpected, but it was like I was listening to one of the commercials. I'm like, stop by for a bucket after work. And I don't live on that direction, but I was kind of going by there. You know, like, I think I will swing in. It was a nice evening.
Down on Speen Street.
On Speen Street, 218 yeah. Speen Street, Natick. So I swing in there. I'm like, maybe I'll just get a bucket. Next thing I know, I'm down in the short game practice area, chipping, pitching, out of the rough, off of tight lies, variety of lies, distances for over an hour. I think I hit four full swing shots. When's the last time you went to a driving range and hit nothing but wedges for over an hour and then finished off the day by hitting a couple of 8 irons and a couple of 6 irons and went home?
That would be never.
Never! Honey. Do you know how much better I feel about my... You know how badly I wanted to go out and play after that? How badly I want to go play right now?
Speak the truth. You can practice every club in your bag.
Every shot in the bag. It was awesome. Anyway, we'll talk with Bill McInerney later. Also, I went out to Shaker Hills this week and talked with Fred Curtis. He's the owner at Shaker Hills Country Club in Harvard, Mass. And got out on the course briefly with their head pro, a guy who I walked in the pro shop. I'm like, oh, I know that dude, Andy Jordan. I thought Andy was a child when he was over at Blue Hill Country Club like a century ago. And he was. He still looks like a child, but he's a grown-ass man, married, got a kid, always been a hell of a golfer. He's the head pro now at Shaker Hills Country Club, which just goes to show you I'm getting old. When people that I think of as children are now head professionals at premier golf courses like Shaker Hills Country Club. So my visit out there, we'll hear that coming up here in just a little while. Two things to start on here this morning. Number one, as I sat down, Sean Silver said to me, he said, oh, well, Hardy, must be excited. It's the fifth major this weekend, Players' Championship. There's no such thing. There's not a fifth major. Do you know the LPGA actually made a fifth major? They went from the four-major rotation, and they created a quote-unquote fifth major? No, you don't know that. You want to know why? Because it's bull. You cannot, even in name, even in marketing purposes, you cannot just automatically call something a fifth major. There's been talk of trying to turn the Players' Championship, TPC Sawgrass, into the fifth major. No, there are four majors. And I got to tell you, there's really only two. There's the U.S. Open and the Open, the British Open. Everything else is kind of invented. All right, the whole thing is invented. What we invent, okay, other than just showing up and plopping down this earth and rolling around in the mud, okay, we invent everything. But if you want to talk about, like, really what's at the core of golf, the Open Championships are it. The Masters was a massive marketing ploy, but it worked. They've been doing it for like 90 years now, so okay. And that's the one that most people think of when they think of golf championships. The Masters still has everyone beat, at least in this country. You go over to Europe and they're going to tell you a lot of people tell you, no, the British Open is where it's at. And they're probably right. It's the oldest, and it's the one most meaningful to them. In this country, it's the Masters. But it's the Masters. It's the U.S. Open. It's the British Open. And fine, I'll give it the PGA Championship. It is the championship for the players that we watch mostly week in and week out, aside from a couple of tournaments here or there that are something other than PGA Tour related, like the Masters. Masters has nothing to do with the PGA Tour. It's an invitational. It's a private tournament. But that's it. PGA Championship is going to grow in recognizability and importance when they move it up on the calendar next year. And it will fall in between. The PGA Championship next year will fall in between the Masters and the U.S. Open. It will no longer be the fourth nearly forgotten child of golf's major championships at the end of the season. But for right now, to call anything a fifth major, careful, you barely got four. You barely have four majors right now. That will change next year, but there is no fifth major. Now, it's a great tournament. I played at a fabulous golf course, and it's fun to watch. But when Webb Simpson is your leader, five strokes clear of Charles Schwartzel, Patrick Cantlay, I don't even know who else is in the running right now. That is not appointment television. I will not change plans for the rest of my day, nor will I try and get out of Mother's Day dinner, or even flip over from watching the Celtics on Sunday to watch Webb Simpson come down the stretch at the Players' Championship. Webb Simpson? Webb Simpson. The guy who won the U.S. Open in 2012, and since then, you tell me. I don't think he's won since 2015. He looked like he was going to take the world over in 2012 when he won the U.S. Open. I looked it up this morning. You know what Webb Simpson's best finishes are in the other majors? PGA Championship is the best one. He tied for 13th 2 years ago. British Open tied for 16th 7 years ago. And his best finish at the Masters was this year, when he tied for 20th. Webb Simpson. Webb Simpson, the guy who got all butthurt when somebody ran up to the trophy presentation at the U.S. Open when he won in 2012 and started yelling about the birds or the forest or something. He said, have a nice night in jail, buddy. Ah, you stuck-up silver spoon jackass. Get off my TV, Webb Simpson. I'm not watching you this weekend. I'll watch TPC Sawgrass. This is a perfect example of a tournament where the course is the star. And Ricky Fowler occasionally, but it won't be Ricky Fowler this year. There's a lot of guys just not making the cut. And so, as a matter of fact, because this is crazy. Because of the way it went down at the end of the second round yesterday, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas both made bogeys on the 18th hole. That pushed the cut number from 142 to 141, or drop the cut number, I should say. So a lot of people got in. Tiger Woods ended up actually getting in because of that. But it also means, and this is weird, there is going to be another cut after today. 80 players made the cut for Saturday. There's going to be a secondary cut. Top 70 in ties will advance to the final round. So again, it's a weird thing happening there this weekend. The course is the star. Webb Simpson, good luck. You're not going to make me want to watch it. That's all. All right, we got a couple of things to do here on the rules of golf, which is normally a boring thing, and they will be changing for 2019. And this is something that you should probably be aware of, especially if you play with guys who are sticklers for the rules. And the only thing I'm a stickler for is just count your strokes. That's all I care about. I don't like playing with guys who are bad at math, if you know what I mean. What'd you have back there? Five? Did you? I wasn't really paying attention, but it seemed like your tee shot was lost. Okay? And I've never been a guy, you go back to the tee, re-tee. No, just take a drop and let's get, but that's one in, two out, now you're hitting three. I'm pretty sure you didn't hole out in five. Just stuff like that. But there are some rule changes that are going to benefit everybody. when it comes to just pace of play and making sure things move along out there. I mean, there is a rule on the books for 2019 encouraging prompt pace of play, recommended that you play ready golf and make each stroke in no more than 40 seconds. Good. Let's keep things moving. You know, I always say, in order to play golf, try and be two or three things. Be good, be fun, be fast. Well, good left me a long time ago, but I'm fun and I play fast. So let's keep things moving out there. I'm all for that one. Use of distance measuring devices. Yes, good. Don't be walking around looking for yardage markers and pacing them off. If you got a laser, shoot it, and you'll be able to use them anywhere unless there's a local rule that says you can't use distance measuring devices. Yes, they're allowed everywhere. Fine. Yep. Get a watch. People used to make fun of me and my Dick Tracy watch that always has the yardages on it, my Garmin. And guys with the $500 Bushnells are constantly asking me for yardages because they don't want to take the little zip Velcro off the bag, pull it out, shoot the stick. Hardy, what does your little gimmicky, cute little watch there say? I'm like, oh, the one that you're making fun of before we tee it off? You're 141 to the front of the green. 152 to the center. And then they shoot it with their Bushnells sometimes just to make sure it's actually 151. Go screw. Get a watch. It's very fast. They're not expensive. Some of the other things that are really going to help, and again, if you're playing with guys who look for their lost balls for 5 minutes, you're playing with the wrong group of guys. I like to look for a lost ball for about, I'm going to say 15 to 20 seconds. If I can't find that ball, I'm dropping one. I'll take the stroke. Let's just keep moving. I don't want anybody pressing this. I don't want to fall out of position here. But the lost ball time is being dropped to 3 minutes instead of 5 minutes. All right? This is something also that affects bad golfers, removing the penalty for a double hit. The penalty stroke for accidentally striking the ball more than once in the course of a stroke has been removed. Yes! So when you chunk that chip shot, you're trying to hit, maybe something resembling an easy flop shot around the green, and you catch it underneath, and you double hit the ball, which I've done. No longer a two-stroke penalty. You just count the one time you're intending to hit it. Thank you. Thank you, USGA. Thank you, RNA. That is very helpful to guys like me. All right, so I'm going to write a little bit more about this probably next week, but I just wanted to share a few of these that were officially adopted, but they won't go into effect until 2019. All right, as I said, coming up, we're going to play our visit to Shaker Hills that I took earlier this week. But right on the other side, Bill McInerney from Core Golf. That's coming up next.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club. Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, he's back. Bill McInerney, who is the co-founder and CEO of Core Golf in Natick, back here on the Sports Hub Golf Club, or Natick, as we say in English. Bill, thanks for being back on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Good to see you once again. I've seen you a couple of times now, both here in studio and at Core Golf, which is this practice facility, this training ground, this proving ground for golfers. You guys have really kind of turned the idea of a driving range upside down
at
Core Golf.
Yeah, absolutely. We've pretty much thought of everything. I've spent my time the last 20 years traveling around the country, going to events, PGA Tour events, junior golf events, playing golf myself, which has become a rare feat. But, so we've basically taken the best of the best practice facilities from around the country, and we built it right here in Natick, Massachusetts.
And it's a range with, like real targets out there. I don't mean like signs with yardages. I'm talking about greens and bunkers, and you get a scorecard. And depending on where you are in the range, you look at yardages, and you can play a game almost in your head. It's almost like playing golf while you're practicing, but that's only one component of it. There's the short game area. There's places to chip and putt. And it kind of leads us into our conversation today, Bill, which is, How are you supposed to go about practicing? And again, I'll use myself as an example for somebody who played last week, and it was pretty typical for me. Couple of pars, couple of doubles, one blow-up hole thrown in, and I get done, I'm like, and I think like a lot of golfers do after a 9 or 18 hole round where you feel good about some shots, but you really wish you could have a couple back. Where do I go from there? How do I go to improve on what I just did when it comes time to head up to core and, you know, wherever you're going to practice?
Yep.
How do you set forth on that, I guess, next session to try and get back out there and do it better the next time?
Yeah, I think everybody's a little bit different in terms of how they should choose what they should practice. Beginner golfers obviously need to go out on the driving range, work on finding some basic fundamentals and maybe paying a little bit less attention to the ball flight and the contact and a little bit more attention on being a little more meticulous with the process of learning how to set up to the ball and aim. The more competitive players and the guys or the women that like to play a lot more, you can base your practice sessions around what might have been your last round of golf. So, for example, if contact was an issue, then you go to the driving range and that's your purpose. If you missed a lot of greens but you hit the ball solid, maybe you got to look a little bit more at course management or coming up with a shot pattern that is a little bit more repeatable. Like Coach Dan was on in the past talking a little bit about ball flight and understanding ball flight, and I think that most people will aim at pins. At Core Golf, we built 14 target greens. We got 18 pins out there. And I think it's an opportunity to learn how to not necessarily aim at the pins, but just work on trying to hit greens. So it's basically trying to figure out what your last tendency might have been and practice that tendency.
Okay. So again, I'll use myself as an example. It's Bill McInerney here from Core Golf. Last time out, I hit a couple of shots. I felt like, wow, those are going to be as good a shots I hit with those clubs all season long. You know, I had to dig myself out of kind of a thick lie with a 5-iron, which normally would, you know, just, you know, send shivers down my spine.
Yeah.
But I managed to hit, you know, a good shot and advance the ball again in the general direction of the green, which is maybe not the best idea. Is that a shot I should go work on some more to try and recapture that feeling and ingrain that? Or should I leave that alone? It's like, no, man, you've got that shot. Leave that one alone. Focus in on the chip shots that you chunked around the green that cost you an extra stroke and you made bogey when you should have been able to save par.
Yeah, I think that number one, you have to understand why you may have hit it. It could have been club choice. The great thing that we have at Core, we have an area, a private members area, that you can actually practice all sorts of types of shots. You could actually practice shots out of deep rough, off uneven lies, out of fairway bunkers. So you can re-experience the shot that you hit on the course. So if you struggled out of the rough that day, you could actually come to Core and practice shots out of the rough. One of our coaches is going to be there. He might say to you, geez, you're trying to hit a 3-iron out of thick rough. Not going to happen. So it could be as simple as a tip as, hey, you're going to have to hit a more lofted club here.
Right.
And, you know, taking a more lofted club might not necessarily get you to the green, but it's going to minimize the big numbers, which is a really good goal for a lot of players.
I think a lot of players have issues around the green, and they don't necessarily want to practice them. But when it comes to practicing your chipping or your pitch shots, you know, whatever your tendencies are, I like to keep the ball, you know, low to the ground and get it rolling as soon as possible. What type of shot should I be practicing? I mean, based on, you know, where my ball ends up when I don't hit the green, which is more often than not, I find myself in a lot of similar situations. In the collar, off the fringe, I've got something that I need to probably get airborne a little bit. Should I be practicing those, or should I be practicing the shots that got me there in the first place?
I'd say a little bit of both. I think that, you know, the more you show up to practice with a purpose, it gets you to think a little bit more outside the box. I think that you made a great point where I think the majority of players would actually go into their practice sessions thinking, geez, you know, I want to hit the ball better so I don't end up in these spots. And that's a great goal, but it is unlikely that that's going to happen, especially for the working people. You know, if you don't do this for a living, the likelihood that you're going to be able to hit the ball exactly where you want to and hit more greens, is probably pretty low. So I'd say practicing those types of shots around the green is critical. And then you have to figure out, is it contact? Am I picking the wrong club? Do I have to work a little bit more on my landing area? Do I have to work a little bit more on reading a particular lie? Is the ball going to spin less or more out of this lie? So there's a whole bunch of different components, but if you don't work on it, you'll never figure these things out. The great thing that we have at our facility, we have an elevated green, a lower green that you can hit bump and run shots into. So it's finding the type of space that you can practice in efficiently and repeat the shots, which you usually can't do on the golf course.
Right. Okay. Bill McInerney, Core Golf. You made a great point about, when I was saying, should I practice the shot that got me off the green or should I practice the chip? It's the shot that ended up off the green might have been a really good shot. And this happens to me all the time where I'll hit an 8-iron into a green and I struck that ball well. And I hit it basically where I wanted to hit it. It didn't hold the green. Well, there's not a whole lot I can do about that. And I think practice has a lot to do with working on the things that you can control. And to me, being able to chip and have some shots around the green that will get me closer and help me to save par or bogey, as the case may be, those are the things you can control. You can't control a lot of stuff when it comes to wind and it comes to how fast a green is or whether or not it's going to hold your ball that day. So maybe the simple way of looking at it is focusing on the things that are somehow within your control on the golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is kind of interesting that if you work on the games, the part of the game that you may not have in the past, like chipping, for example, and you made it one of your goals to become an amazing chipper throughout the course of the summer, most of the time someone's ball striking actually gets a little bit better because they start swinging a little more fearlessly, you know? And I think more often than not, people are very cautious over a shot because in their mind, they're saying, geez, I don't want to miss it here. I don't want to miss it there. But if you become almost a little bit of an expert chipper, you won't really care so much if you miss the greens. So in strange ways, working on one thing could improve other parts of your game. And the great thing about working on your chipping is that it really does help you understand what makes the ball spin or not spin as much. It helps you understand trajectory, helps you understand contact a little bit more. So chipping is an incredibly valuable thing to spend your time working on. And like I said, finding a facility that has all these different types of lies is a critical part of developing an understanding of ball flight, trajectory, spin, which are the key components.
You mentioned one thing that I wanted to ask you about because I haven't had a chance to see it myself. You have a place at Core where you can work on different lies, ball above your feet, below your feet, downhill lie, uphill lie. What does that place look like? I mean, is it an actual part of the range? Are there spots set up to mimic those lies? Is it like a balance board? I mean, what do you guys have out there?
Yeah, we got an uneven lie mat, but then we also have areas around the tee box that you can hit shots off of where we got short grass, taller grass. So it's pretty cool. And the memberships folks are allowed to move around to these different locations. So it's pretty unique opportunity to practice these different lies. And that you bring up a good point, too, because you know, someone might actually go on the course, and when you're practicing, you do practice off of flat lies. I mean, the huge majority of time, you're just hitting off of flat lies. And at our facility, having the opportunity to practice with a ball, you know, 1 or 2 inches below your feet makes a huge difference because you could go out, be hitting the ball amazing on the course, hit your first drive down the middle of the fairway, first shot you have off of one, in the fairway, the ball's an inch below your feet, and you end up topping it or thinning it, and it goes way right, and you think there's something wrong with your swing, then you start fidgeting around, and before you know it, you're hitting the ball all over the place.
Can you show me, next time I'm out there, will you show me the ball above your feet lie? Because you just said it, my home course. It doesn't matter how I hit my tee shot on the ninth hole.
Yep.
I know what the lie is. The ball is going to be above your feet, and it's also going to be a bit of a downhill lie too. It's a tricky ass shot, and every time I play there, I've got the shot from varying distances, but it's always the same. Ask me how many times I've practiced it.
How many times?
Zero, Bill! Not once have I practiced that shot, unless I'm alone on the course, no one's behind me, and I drop another ball after I chunk it and leave it 30 yards short of the green.
And then everyone starts yelling at you.
Show me where it is when I'm out there next time, please.
Yeah.
I need this.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Bill, I didn't mean to yell. But now I'm excited. I'm excited to go back. Okay, Core Golf, 218 Speen Street, Natick. Can you show up and just hit a bucket of balls there, by the way?
You can show up and just hit a bucket of balls. But it's not just a bucket of balls. I mean, you don't feel like you're hitting a bucket of balls. And you could take your bucket and hit a third of your bucket on the left side of the facility, the third in the middle, a third on the right, and you feel like you're experiencing different golf courses. It's pretty neat.
That's what I need. That's what I need. All
right.
That's
what everybody needs.
Yeah, Bill McInerney, co-founder, CEO, Core Golf in Natick, coregolf.com.
CoreGolf.com, KOHRGOLF.com.
Excellent. Bill, good to see you again. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Joining us now in the Sports Hub Golf Club, I should say I'm joining Fred because we're sitting here on the patio at his golf course, Shaker Hills Country Club. Fred Curtis is the owner. Fred, thanks for having us out here today.
Nice to be with you. Thank you for coming.
First of all, what town are we in? Because depending on what map you look at, it might tell you Harvard, might tell you somewhere else.
Oh, it's Harvard, Mass.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
01451.
All right. You got the zip code and everything. It sounds like a man who knows what he's talking about. So if you would please, Fred, you told me a few minutes ago that you bought this golf course a few years ago. Were there not any like skydiving schools available? Something, a little less risky than buying a golf course? I mean, what are you thinking? You bought a golf course yourself. How did that come to be?
A dream come true, really. I saw an opportunity. I'm a man that follows up on opportunities, and I saw a tremendous former Golf Digest number one public course in Massachusetts. I saw it in bankruptcy. I saw an opportunity at an auction to get it at the right price, and I think more importantly, architecturally, I saw a tremendous opportunity where the original designers had missed a couple, I think, critical items that make... that were opportunistic and that I feel really allowed the course to just be completely different from any other golf experience.
Well, as we sit here, we're on the lower patio, which is just off, like the restaurant and pro shop here. But from where we sit right now, we're not even up above. I can see number 9 green, number 1 tee box, number 10 tee box, and 18 green. It's a convergence of tee boxes and greens that I've really never seen on any golf course anywhere.
It is. It's completely unusual. And I think there lied the opportunity where the original designers had the, for instance, the 18th hole finishing almost a mile away from the clubhouse. And they also had items like cart charging stations, electrical cords and such in the main area of the course. And I just saw a tremendous opportunity of improvement. And who would buy a golf course and keep it the same? I think it's not a signature hole. I think it's signature hole after signature hole after signature hole. And so on.
When you rerouted things, and you did have to, as you said, blow some stuff up and change some things around, you did lengthen it a little bit, at least on one hole, on 18, right?
On the 18th hole, yeah, we lengthened that from an original par 4 straight 440 to a sweeping, dramatic dogleg finish 570 yards. Altogether, from our tips, we're approaching 7,000 yards, which is championship style, and rightfully so, because this is a championship course.
So let's talk about the club overall here for a second. Shaker Hills Country Club, can anybody come out and play? You're looking at members only. What's the status of people coming to play out here?
Yeah, we do invite the public. We're mainly a higher-end public course, so absolutely. As a matter of fact, if you look at our demographic, you'll see that most of the golfers here are driving upwards of an hour to get here. If you go to the parking lot at this moment, you will see, Hardy, license plates from New Hampshire, Maine, Rhode Island, and we're proud of that. We're not your neighborhood golf course. We're a destination place. We've had people from Logan Airport that just have a few hours in town that have been recommended to come here.
Yeah, and from what I've seen so far, that's a great explanation of this. When people say, I'm new to Boston, or I'm coming in, I want to play golf, there's one or two places I think a lot of people think of, either due to their proximity or just their notoriety. But this is one to add to the list. If you're going to play one golf course in the Boston area, just from what I've seen so far, this looks like one of those spots.
You got to see it to believe it. The beauty alone, 260 acres, not a house on the course, completely pristine. This is Harvard, Mass., which is a diamond in terms of heritage and such. So I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
So you said you are open to the public, but you do have members here also?
We do. We're semi-private, so we do have memberships available from our student, golfer, military, right up to seniors, and our deluxe packages as well.
Right, and there's a lot to take in here. I mean, we were up on that second floor outdoor patio, all brand new. There's tons of places to sit and eat and drink and fireplaces. So I'm guessing this is kind of an event destination too, weddings, parties, stuff like that.
And corporate golf outings are specialty. Full 200 plus person dining area. You saw the sprawling bar area. Of course, everything situated with that beautiful clubhouse atmosphere and golf right off the clubhouse, which I think is delightful for those types of functions. We were just rated, I'm proud to report, by Golf Advisor. We got just right off the press just recently, number 4 in all of New England. And that's based on the reports of hundreds upon hundreds of golfers that have tried different courses around New England.
I want to get out there and take a look. So you said that you don't have a signature hole here. Tell me about a couple of your favorites.
Well, the 18th, of course, newly designed and you know, right from my brain. I favor that one as the most special hole. But again, it's signature hole after signature hole here at Shaker Hills. There's got to be at least 12 to 15 holes that would stand up to the signature hole at most public courses. Number 8 strikes me. Number 2, right over the hill here, 550-yard par 5. I mean,
well, you're going to have to pick one. You're going to have to pick someone to take me out on the course, because I want to go play one hole either with you or with your pro or somebody, and we'll get a sense of what this course is all about. So sure. You want to pick one? You want to go out there? What do you want to do?
I think we head out to number 8.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, good. Let's head out to number 8, and we'll see what it's all about here at Shaker Hills Country Club in Harvard, Mass. Well, Fred took me on a little tour to get out here, but let me tell you, it was worth it. And he wasn't lying. There are a ton of what you could call signature holes here at Shaker Hills Country Club. Now I'm standing on number 8 tee box with the head pro, Andy Jordan. I know you. I know you from back in the day.
It's been a while, Hardy, but finally back together a decade later.
That's right. It's been a long time. So you're out here at Shaker Hills now, and we're standing here on the tee box of what, I mean, I don't even know. It looks to be a moderate to lengthy par 4, but this must play longer because there's water and it's uphill at the end.
Yeah, so we've got about a 400-yard par 4. A lot of the players will actually hit it right to avoid the water. Today we're going to try to go over. Nothing like hitting your first tee shot of the year, 240-yard carry over the water, but we'll give it a go.
Well, this is the lament of every head pro, is that they don't play any golf, especially when you got a new baby at home. So I won't be too critical, but I'm going to watch you play this hole, because that's a lot better than watching me play this hole, all right? So let's tee one up here. Let's see how you do. And just, you know, hey, swing, let me be the head pro. Just swing easy, okay? Oh, daddy long legs. What are you talking about, first swing of the year? No chance that is your first swing of the year.
No, maybe second swing, but it's not too far behind.
Did you take my advice? Did you swing easy? You swung out of your shoes. Come on.
Yeah, I went after that one.
All right, well, it shows. All right, nice shot. All right, we've arrived at head pro Andy Jordan's tee shot here in the 8th hole at Shaker Hills Country Club. You left yourself on this 400-yard hole. I'm going to say you're about 110, but you're uphill.
Definitely straight uphill. Luckily, we're downwind today.
So what are you going to hit?
So I'm going to hit a gap wedge here, try to fly it to the back of the green where the pin is.
We're all counting on you. Gap wedge too much? Gap wedge, no, looks like you're about pin high. Nice shot.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a tough green to hit because you can't see any of the green from down here. So you just have to trust the yardage and go for it.
Are you on?
Should be on the right side.
Yeah, well, should be. Let's go see. All right, gap wedge was enough, but barely found the right front right portion of the green. You left yourself some real estate here for your birdie.
Yeah, I left about 35 feet on the table here, but...
You know what? I'm going to stand up here near the hole. I've got more faith in you than you do. It's going to take me a while to get here, though. 35 feet, my ass. This is 40 if it's an inch. Okay, Andy, I'll tend the pin for you. Ball is on its way. Ooh! Assisted by the wind. You know what? He did roll it up here close. I'm not going to give that to you, though. I want you to knock that in the hole. Nice par. Andy Jordan, head pro, Shaker Hills Country Club.
Thanks, buddy.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
I have not seen this. I don't know if there's video of it anywhere. If there is, you got to let me know. It's Hardy, Sports Hub Golf Club. Hello. What? What? What, Silver?
I'm just so nice of you to introduce yourself.
Well,
yeah, people know what they're signing up for at 7 a.m. on a Saturday. It's you.
I don't take it for granted that people just know who I am. If I were some big shot Sean Silver, then I would perhaps have a more confidence in that people just knew me when I spoke.
Hey, don't count yourself out. You're a public figure. People know what they're signing up for at this hour in the morning.
No need to apologize for the golf show. People know that it's on Saturday mornings and that actual sports talk will resume shortly.
Yeah, I mean, well, this last year at this time, they were tuning in for Adam Kaufman. So
that's right, Celtics at 7.
Things slightly different now, but, you know, you're a recognizable voice. Come on.
There's going to be a lot of Celtics talk. There's going to be a lot of Bruins talk, I'm sure, when Ryan Johnston takes over here at 8 o'clock this morning. Plenty of Red Sox talk coming up on the station today. What with Chris Sale, 15 Ks last night and a no decision. 9 innings he goes and gets the no decision in the Red Sox loss last night to the Blue Jays in Toronto. And even more to talk about with the fact that Mr. Numb and Stingy, David Price, will be taking the mound at Rogers Center tonight. Is it still Rogers Center in Toronto? I believe it is.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. That to me, that's the topic of the day. Game one between the Celtics and Cavaliers is phenomenal tomorrow. Unfortunately, it's going to be happening during a time when we all should be spending time with our mothers or wives or sisters or anyone who is a mother, and that's the most important thing. It's smack dab in the middle of the day when a lot of late brunches, early dinner stuff is going to be going on. That's okay. That's all right. We'll figure it out. But to me, the story of the day is how long. What's David Price's start like tonight? And it's one of three things. It's an amazing, like, 7 innings, 2 runs on 1 hit. You know, like, there.
Yeah, thanks for doubting me.
Or it's one and a third, and he gets chased off the mound. There's nothing in between, I don't think. But either way, he's kind of screwed. Because if he goes 1 1/3, people are just going to be yelling soft. And if he does go 7 2/3 and has an amazing outing out there, people are going to say, well, I guess you weren't that hurt after all. He's kind of in a no-win situation. But there's plenty of that today here on the Sports Hub. To wrap things up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club today, this story, I've not seen it. I don't know that there is video of it. This happened to Brooks Koepka earlier this week. He's on the range at the Players' Championship. This is how he got injured. This is crazy. I've never heard of this before. He's on the range. He's getting ready to hit a 3-iron. Now, I haven't carried a 3-iron in probably 10 years, but many tour pros still do. Some carry 2-irons because they're crazy and they're inhuman. He's getting ready to hit a 3-iron when somebody drives a golf cart 15 yards in front of him on the practice range. I don't know who this idiot was. or why you would think it would be okay to drive a golf cart onto the driving range. You know, just a maintenance thing back and forth. Maybe didn't see Koepka there. I don't know where they were going, but he was in the middle of his swing, and he was able to stop it before he actually hit the ball. Here's a quote from Koepka. There was a bunch of guys around that were like, holy blank, I can't believe you actually stopped that swing. He would have been dead. It was perfect timing. You ever been hit with a golf ball, Silver?
No, sir. Should have yelled too.
I can't believe I gave you a laugh on that. It's bad enough. And I worked at a golf course for like a couple of summers as like a cart kid and, you know, graduated to, you know, wiping down the counter in the shop, you know. But I saw a woman come off the golf course once who got hit with a golf ball. It was a drive that hit on the ground in front of her, bounced once, and hit her square in the mouth. And it broke, I don't know how many teeth. She was a bloody mess. It was awful. I myself have been hit once, knock on wood. Knock on wood.
On the noggin?
Nope.
Okay.
That's no, good. I'm knocking on wood so that it doesn't happen again.
I got it. But I was going to say, if it was your noggin, it would explain some things. Yeah.
You're not getting a courtesy laugh for that. Someone hit a drive and again bounced once, maybe twice, and hit me like side of leg, ankle, like right on the bone. Felt like I'd been hit with a sniper rifle. Had Brooks Koepka actually hit that 3-iron to the guy 15 yards in front of him, and it would. That turn you off like a switch. You're not walking away from that one. But he hurt his wrist. Apparently he's been dealing with wrist injuries, but that's where it happened. So he re-injured his wrist, and that screwed up his tournament. So we'll see how he ends up going after this. Ryan Johnston just walked into the studio, sauntered in.
Never been hit by a golf ball. My cart has been hit once or twice, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think all of if you play golf long enough, you're going to, you know, at least your cart, your bag, something is, you are going to hit someone or it. And it's on a.
I don't think I've.
Two
ever,
courses in
I,
particular.
I don't think I've ever hit anyone.
Not even a cart or anything?
No. Not that I can remember.
I used to get hit all the time.
You know, maybe I.
When I was mowing greens.
Kind of muscled up a little bit and hit into the group in front of me once or twice, but I don't think I ever actually struck them.
McElroy just said something. You don't have headphones. You couldn't hear it.
I used to work at a golf course.
Okay.
And when I was mowing greens, people would be impatient and they would just fly the balls onto the green.
Did you ever get hit on the fly?
I got hit on the leg a bunch of times.
That's awful. That's no good. See, you can use it on him, Silver. That explains a lot.
That's why I don't buy coffee from Mary Lou's anymore, because the owner of Mary Lou's hit me like 3 or 4 times.
Well, now we have to say all nice things about Mary Lou's for the rest of the day.
That sponsor's gone.
I don't think they're an advertiser, but I love Mary Lou's. You want to say anything nice about Mary Lou's?
They're terrific.
They're terrific. Okay, there we go. We balanced out what he just said. Anyway, Brooks Koepka plays through wrist injury from avoiding cart driver with shot. Unbelievable. All right, Ryan Johnston, never been hit. Bruins players, I don't know that any of them pulled the move that David Krejci did a few years ago, which was the day after they were eliminated, I believe, by Montreal. What year would that have been when they lost to Montreal in the postseason?
Was that 14?
Sounds right.
It was the last year. Yeah, it was the last time they went to the playoffs before last year.
I was at Golfsmith in Watertown, may have still been Golftown at that time. And I was standing in there, and I saw a woman walking around in the store that had no business being in there. Just, I mean, like, this is a really striking woman. I believe she had a dog with her.
Wait, a striking woman can't be in a golf shop?
Not shopping for golf equipment.
Okay.
Just walking around with, like, an accessory dog.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So, like, doesn't look like she's in there because she's a golfer.
Yeah. Well, not looking at golf women, just like wandering around the store aimlessly, right?
Okay, so like what you would look like if your wife dragged you out shopping for,
yes,
say, women's clothing or
and
something.
And thank
like
you
that.
For saving me.
Yes.
Plenty of attractive women golfers and men golfers,
right.
But if in a golf
you
store,
would be, in that situation, you would be a very attractive man hanging out in...
No, but I'm saying that if you're in a golf store, you're looking at golf... equipment or accessories. She was not.
Okay.
She looked like she was killing time. That's right. Why I say she had no business being in there.
Like an old gentleman sitting on a bench at the mall with his wife's purse, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Except this was, this woman walking around with an accessory dog in a golf store. And I said to a friend of mine who worked in there, I'm like, what's going on there? And he goes, oh, that's Krejci's wife. He's in here picking up new wedges. I'm like, he was on the ice 14 hours ago. Like, yeah, it's...
Hey, you know what? Once the off-season has begun...
Further proof these losses affect us much more than it affects them. Like, nope, time to move on.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe that's how he makes himself feel better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you walk into a golf shop, it probably lights up your life a little bit.
I just like the idea that he was in there buying wedges. I'm like, that he must be a golfer. He wasn't in there, I'm like... I'm going to get a new driver.
A lot of those guys spend a lot of their off season on the golf course. Well, a lot of the,
and that is the answer to
and travel the world and right. You know, and it's like I know there's a group of guys, most of them now former players, who get together every summer and play like a 4-day, like 36 holes a day. It's, you know, they tweet all about it and pictures and everything like that. I mean, it's like this is, and they travel all over the country and do it.
That was the question that I asked Ray Bourque years ago. He came on like the golf show here, maybe in the first year, and I had this really elaborate theory. And I said, Ray, what is it about hockey players that makes them such good golfers? I said, is it a similar like swing motion? Is it you know, the hand eye coordination? Is it the movement, you know, the striking down on the puck for a slap shot when you get that bend, and the same movement when you're trying to compress the ball against the turf in the golf swing? And he said, "No, I think it's just because we have our summers off."
Yeah.
That was it.
You know what? And an inordinate number of left-handed golfers among the hockey set.
Oh, really?
They're almost all of them play lefty. Because there's a lot of left-handed hockey. There's a lot of left-handed shots, you know.
But most of those guys are right-handed.
Right, but you...
Do they then go play golf?
I'm telling you, we used to have a golf outing every year with the minor league club, and right before the season started, and I would say 75% of those guys play lefty.
So there's...
It was tough to get enough left-handed clubs.
Right. There's a lot of Phil Mickelsons out there. Phil is right-handed.
Because your dominant hand, when you swing a hockey stick, your dominant hand is not the same as it is when you swing a baseball, like, you know, for a baseball swing.
Not for everybody, but, yeah, it's like you keep your dominant hand on the back part of the stick for when you're reaching and you're doing other stuff, and you develop the power with your offhand for your slap shot and stuff, but... For golfers, for Mickelson anyway, he learned the swing by watching...
Because he was mirroring his dad.
Mirroring his father and just doing a left-handed swing, even though he is right-handed. I didn't know that about golfers, though. So a lot of hockey players play
lefty.
Who are right-handed, though.
They are naturally right-handed and shoot with a hockey stick left-handed. So it's more natural to them.
Different.
Is different, but I'm guessing that's why they picked it up.
Huh. All right. So Ryan Johnston's going to do a full hour on this, so stick around for that. Actually, less than 4 hours.
Breaking down the hockey players' golf swings.
Right, right, because we've gone late here. Sean Silver will get the headlines. Ryan Johnston coming up next. Thank you to my guest today, Bill McInerney from Core Golf. I went out for – I had a lesson with Dan Boisvert at Core Golf earlier this week, all short game, over an hour, just pitching and chipping. It was phenomenal from their short game area. It's like hit a couple of flop shots from the rough. Now move up 10 yards. I was hitting flops off of tight lies to the green 10 yards away. A shot that gives me nightmares. And I was hitting shot after shot after shot after one lesson at Core. I'm not saying I'm fixed, but it's a great spot. Great spot. And thank you to everybody out at Shaker Hills Country Club for having us out this week. Fred Curtis and Andy Jordan. I'm sure we'll be visiting Shaker Hills again later on in this season. As I said... Ryan Johnston coming up next here on the Sports Hub.